Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Other Woman and the Wife, where we discuss why infidelity exists and what we can learn from it. Today, I'm joined with Anne-Marie in the studio, and you guys will be seeing her a lot more in the studio with me because she is helping me stay accountable to what it is that I truly want to do, which is building a podcast that reaches the people that I intend to reach and inform them with stories and information that they don't currently have because nothing like it exists on the market. Today, we're going to be talking a lot about my own worldviews. So a lot of you have asked for me to better explain how I view the world and how my view of the world has changed over the years. And in this episode, you can expect to hear about the art of changing your mind and how I came to kind of understanding that that was an art that I needed to be able to execute in my own life in order for me to have a healthy, happy, peaceful existence. We're also going to be talking about adopting and changing worldviews, family, peers, motherhood, and deconstruction. And I can't wait for Anne-Marie to share more about that topic with me as well. And we're also going to be striking on how to embrace change rather than exist in the resistance of it. So let's go ahead and get started. And the way that this episode is going to play out is Anne-Marie is going to be prompting me a lot with questions, and she knows a lot of my motives, and she knows how to really get it out of me. So Anne-Marie, why don't you go ahead and lead the charge?
All right. So I think that a good place to start is going to be, how did infidelity and ultimately the experience of marriage impact your worldviews?
Yeah. So I think that the experience of infidelity impacted my worldviews because I was pretty dogmatic at the time of my affair. I felt like I had a pretty firm hold on how to operate inside the world and how the world around me should be operating. And so when the experience of infidelity happened in my life, it kind of revealed to me how inaccurate my own perceptions of the world and relationships and love and life were, and whether I could even measure up to the standards that I had inside of my own mind. I think that my worldview at that time was detrimental to my well-being because I held firmly to the Ten Commandments, and one of those Ten Commandments was, thou shalt not commit adultery. Yet I was the one who had been committing adultery.
Isn't there two commandments in reference to that?
Which one? Oh, tell me. I think I forgot them. Oh, isn't it also like something about your neighbor?
Covet your neighbor's wife. There's actually two commandments against
this. I believe it. I believe it. And I definitely walked in transgression of both.
So let's dive into particularly how marriage itself. So like, why did you even want to get married in the first place? Why did you have this desire to get married?
I definitely had a desire to get married all throughout my childhood. I thought that marriage was the goal in my life. And so with that goal in mind, I knew that I had to act. And in order to become married, I needed to find a spouse. And so I kind of made it my mission to adhere to my religious foundations, to ensure that I had a full and productive life by sticking by those commands. Being a submissive wife, I definitely had the understanding that I needed to become what the world told me would result in my happiness. And at that time, I think society had been pitching the American dream, the picket white fence, the kids, the dog, the house, pretty hardcore. And even when I had achieved all of those things, I still felt pretty hollow inside because I did not have an understanding of what my own fulfillment needs were. I just kept following a script.
Yes, I very much was of the same mindset as far as that was what was messaged to me, that marriage was the goal. So when I achieved marriage so young, I was very puzzled at how come this wasn't like doing all the things I was told it was going to do.
Yeah, I also think that I was incentivized to become married because I didn't actually want to take responsibility for my own life. I didn't want to be responsible for my own happiness. I think that I really wanted to appease others. And when I realized that appeasing others did not provide me fulfillment, it was kind of this conundrum of sorts, because then it was like, well, if this doesn't actually satisfy me, yet this is what I have been told will satisfy me, what do I do next? And I think that what I had to do in order to get myself out of that place was acquire new information, which really brought me to a place where instead of trying so hard to be a good Christian or be right or correct or any of those things, I really wanted to understand what it meant to be human, and bringing it all kind of down to brass tacks in order for me to get a clear view of what I needed in order to feel safe and thriving inside the world.
So then when infidelity struck, what was that experience like after having this mindset that you'd kind of been living by?
It felt hostile inside of my own mind. It felt like there was nobody to blame for my difficulty in existing than myself. And it really did reveal to me how much responsibility I was shirking onto other people for my own peace and happiness, and how much I was doing to provide peace and happiness to other people.
Yeah, I definitely know that that was the first moment that I had done something that was so against my own nature that I didn't know what to make of myself anymore. Like I had, that was the peak of self-abandonment at that time, was doing this thing that I had to process how it happened, why it happened, how I could have done that.
Yeah, definitely. It was a lot of reflection, a lot of introspection, and it was also understanding why I felt the way that I felt. I think at that point in my life, I dismissed all feelings, considered them not real, and was very much a suppressor and avoider of my own feelings. I think at that time, the way that I dealt with my feelings is I would get to a peak point of, I cannot tolerate this anymore. And I would explode in some really irrational way because I was holding on to so much frustration inside of myself that it would blow up other parts of my life. And I thought that the effective way for me to deal with my emotions was by dumping all of what I thought, like, and all of that I felt after, like, you know, a long period of time of holding on to all of it, only to realize that dumping it on somebody else was not effectively processing my experiences. I really needed to understand the purpose of my experience in order for me to process it. And that didn't require anybody but me. Me going inside of my own self and trying to understand the process that enacted itself before I made decisions that I had made, and realizing how much of my decisions were just temporary fixes for something that was going to exist within me forever, which was my emotions. And so I needed to really come to terms with the depths of my emotions and being able to constructively process experiences in a way that would benefit not only me, but if I become more of a benefit to myself, I can be more of a benefit to other people around me.
Yeah, I know also for me, that was a time in my life where I really had to process, and I don't think I processed it for years, but I really had to process the difference between an action and myself. Like I was taking on that I was a horrible person. And it was like, well, that was a horrible thing that happened. But it was not connecting. Like I was like, no. There's no flipping this around. This is just the way that it is. And it was something that I definitely internalized for a lot of years.
Yeah.
Before I was able to step away and be like, why am I internalizing this and not differentiating between my emotions and myself?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that people personalize choices and they aren't able to differentiate between the behavior and like the person. And I think that behavior, like human behavior, is really made up of interesting patterns. I think it's like every 5 years, I step into a different version of myself. And if I'm constantly trying to just be who I was, then I am acting in opposition to like the universal truth that like change is the only constant. And really getting comfortable with the fact that I actually needed to change my behavior in order to become the person that I wanted to become. And I think that for a really long time, I was in disbelief that I could behave in a way that negatively impacted others. And until I kind of claimed the, I'll say the consequences or the externalities of the choices that I made, I neglected to understand the intention of the choices that I was making in the present moment. And then that was when I really became super intentional with words, super intentional with self-talk, and incredibly intentional with the people that I surrounded myself with.
Yes, I would definitely say this was a turning point in my life for that, realizing the people I couldn't tell. And then kind of sitting back and realizing like, wait a second, if these are your people and these are your most important people in your life, why can't you share this information? Why does their opinion matter so much? And then dealing with the answers to those questions.
I love that you strike on like the opinions of others, because I do think that the opinions of others have merit and value. And for a really long time, I think I was forcing the, you know, people say somebody else's opinion of you doesn't have any real value. Like it's ultimately your opinion of yourself that has the most value in it. And I remember really struggling with that because I would prioritize somebody else's opinion of me over my own opinion of myself. And instead, I'll say that I was abnormally using their opinions to fucking like kill myself. Like I'd be like, oh, they would never. And it's like, you don't know that. Like you don't know what anybody would do. And you obviously didn't even know what you would do in a situation that you were in. So,
well, because what I was going to say is just that when you're talking about other people's opinions, then that might be a good time to segue into this common misconceptions, because that's kind of other people's opinions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How do you grapple with other people's opinions, especially when you know that they are incorrect? And whenever we were preparing for this episode, I was like, Anne-Marie, let's like dive into like the common misconceptions that people have of me that I would like to get in front of, because I know that I don't have to defend myself in this venture, but there's also this piece of me that wants to set the record straight, like often. And so we have decided to carve out some time in order for me to set the record straight. So what are the common misconceptions that people have with me that you and I isolated?
So one that I know I thought of right away is this idea online that you support affairs when in reality, you're just supporting the men and women affected by the affairs. Like you're not helping people cheat better. You know, like you're actually like.
It's definitely an interesting place to be because I know the truth of the fact that I cannot stop a relationship that I am not in. I cannot end a relationship that I am not actively participating in. And so I like to stay relationship irrelevant when it comes to talking about whether I support or I am against a relationship that already exists. And I don't care. Like, I just don't have an opinion really on a relationship that isn't mine to navigate. And I am very much, I'll say, incentivized to care for the individuals impacted by the experience of infidelity, because I think it ultimately puts you in a place where you're doing mental gymnastics over and over and over again. And I really want to come up to the people who have experienced infidelity, feel trapped inside of their heads with going through all of the what ifs and how could this have been prevented and all of that, and being like, okay, like, yeah, we can do all of that, but maybe we should also check in on you. How are you feeling in this moment? Like, I think that the individuals who participate in infidelity need to be reached. And this is the way that I want to do it. And I do not think that affairs are necessarily a good or bad thing. Like, I think people really want me to have an opinion on that. And I just don't really. I think that it exists and I want to talk about it.
Well, I would say like society condemns it as one of the worst things. Like, yeah. I hear like a lot. I definitely embodied that for a while, that I was like the worst human being for what I had done. And it took a long time for me to be like, actually, this is something that happened, but it's not the end of the world. Like,
it's not.
Like, it can, it seems like the topic will just cripple like conversation.
It definitely does. I think that we give infidelity way more power than it should have. And I think the reason infidelity has as much power as it does over the individual is because of all of the false, inaccurate narratives that we perpetuate as a society. I think that the shame and the taboo comes from a place of wanting to keep the system in order, and the system being the social construct of marriage. I think that society does benefit from the institution of marriage. Like, it has an economic impact, it has a social impact, but we don't see how it kind of needs to be reinvented. I think that our understanding of relationships among humans has evolved over time, and the institution of marriage has not. And specifically, the people who are inside of it and still very much attached to the idea of what marriage should be, or the idea of what marriage could be. And I'm very much a, well, why don't we go ahead and drill into the idea of being an individual inside of a marriage first? Because if we are not showing up inside of marriage as a whole individual, then we are not able to function in the way that we were intended to function.
Yeah, for sure. And then one last one, would you say that there's any misconceptions that really let you around like you and Stan's relationship or your relationship now? We don't really talk about this. I'm just curious.
Oh, yeah. I think that people look at my content and they're like, oh, look at her. She thinks that she has something special. And like, yeah, I do. But that doesn't mean that it is immune to like all of the challenges that relationships endure. Like Stan and I, our relationship could end at any point in time, come death or divorce. My hope does not hinge on the future of our relationship being a certain way, because that is outside of my control. And I think that a lot of people who are attracted to my content, the reason they're attracted to my content is because they do have this idol of marriage, or they have this hope that their affair is going to turn into my story. And I'm like, why do you want a story that isn't your own? And I just think that it bothers me whenever people prioritize my relationship with Stan over me, the individual who's like putting out the fucking content, you know? Not that I'm the most important piece of this or anything like that, but it just starts to feel a lot like you're not really hearing me. When I see the way that people pine after my own story.
Yeah, I think people are really, they're seeking comfort in the idea that this could happen. And it almost undercuts how difficult the day-to-day is. It's the same as any other marriage, no matter how it started. It's got the same challenges of every other marriage.
Yeah, I think I said something once on the podcast where I was like, people are like, oh my God, you got the happy ending. And I'm like, what? Like, my ending has not arrived yet. I am happy today, and that's all that really matters to me. And what I got was not a happy ending. I got a second marriage. I got a second marriage with a different person. And this different person, like, I am not trying to minimize the gratitude and the joy and love that I have for my relationship with Stan or who he is as an individual. But for some reason, it still is this thing within society that like relationships are the most important thing in life, and making sure that the relationship lasts for eons is the work that we should be doing. And that just really gets under my skin.
Yeah, I think society really puts a priority on romantic love and completely undercuts what a majority of your connections are in your life, which are the non-romantic. Like the romantic is only supposed to be for one person ever. That's the storybook ending. Like, and yet that's the one that we focus on with all of our efforts.
It definitely is.
If you are the other woman in your relationship and you love this podcast, you would love the Other Women community. The Other Women community is a membership program designed to help other women just like you reclaim their relationship with themselves and heal from their affair. We provide a safe and supportive environment for you to open up and talk about your experiences. We give you the tools and resources you need to grow into an authentic, empowered individual. If you're ready to take the next step in your healing journey, head on over to theotherwomanandthewife.com/community to learn more about the membership and all it has to offer.
Yeah, so now we're going to shift into adopting and changing worldviews and the challenges that come with this. So let's start with why it's so scary to admit that worldviews change.
I think it's scary to acknowledge the fact that your worldview changes, because like the way that I think about it is that I was still at the time when I had not begun deconstructing with my active choices inside of my head, but definitely had already done it like on the exterior, I'll say. Like I had chose to allow the experience of falling in love in my life, which invalidated the belief that I clung so tightly to, which was falling in love is just a story you're telling yourself. And what happened then was it was like, well, if I was wrong about that, what else could I be wrong about? And I think that there is a lot of fear in the admission of holding a belief system that was inaccurate. Because it does start to feel a little bit like the world beneath your feet that you operate on isn't really there anymore. It's like, well, if this shifts, then what else shifts? And if that, then, you know, this, it becomes this domino effect of, well, if my religion taught me this and it led me to a place of something that I don't want to do, then is that really something that I should be clinging so tightly to? And so if your identity is wrapped up in these beliefs that you hold, it feels like you're losing bits and pieces of yourself. And if you're still tethered to them, then you really don't want to let them go. It starts to feel like your sense of security is leaving you. But that's not it at all. Like, my sense of security used to be founded in the fact that my afterlife was protected by something that somebody else did for me. And now my sense of security,
rescued.
Yeah, like saved. I think that's what they call it. Like
saved.
Like God was protecting me. And because I was so dedicated to him inside of my mind, then I will be safe always. And some of that stuff was really detrimental because what it did was it evaded my responsibility to act. So if I was holding tight to the belief that, like, I am safe because I chose to accept Jesus into my heart, then I don't really do the things that need to be done in order to make me feel safe in my present moment. And so I think that being able to allow myself to adopt and change the way that I viewed the world, it started with me understanding, how do I currently view the world? And are there inaccuracies in it that kind of need to be cleaned up by me? And I think that that ultimately was the work. I think that my worldviews that I clung so tightly to in the past were founded a lot in judgment. Like, I felt like I could protect myself if I judged other people, if I had come up with these judgments, and then realizing that my judgments were founded not in who that person was, but what I thought of that person. And then it brought me to this place where I was like, what are my thoughts built off of? Like, I don't actually know this person. So why do I have such a negative perception of them? And then it was like, oh, damn, that's all secondhand information. Like, that was somebody else's experience of a certain stereotype. And they have developed a truth based on that stereotype. And I really wanted to rid myself of that. I wanted to be able to see the person as they were in the moment that I was in with them, rather than understanding how other people perceived and came to conclusions about them.
Yeah, I know for myself, in like why it was also so scary to deconstruct was knowing that a lot of people in my life weren't going to come along for the ride. Like, just knowing that they were already 30, 40 years deep, or they were like not even close to wanting to talk about their realities being kind of shatterable. So the moment that I started embodying the deconstruction of it all, it was hard to then put it out there and watch people like respond.
React.
Yeah. Watch people react to it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The way that I started to like come around to this was when I thought about the prospect of losing people that were important to me, I started to realize that I thought they valued who I was because I believed a certain way. And then I started to realize that like my value wasn't really, you know, theirs to determine where it lived as far as my belief systems. Like, I started to embrace people of different belief systems because I wanted to understand more. I wanted to get rid of all of the judgment that I had of other people and myself. So yeah, I remember the moment I was in therapy and I had said something to my therapist that alluded to my dad or something like that. And I was like, well, according to my dad. And she's like, oh, your dad. And I'm like, yeah, well, according to him, that just doesn't fly. And she's like, oh, that's an interesting perspective. And so I started to think about it more, and I started to think more critically about the people who had positions of authority inside of my mind and whether they really needed to have that authority anymore or if I could step into the role of being the authority figure in my own life.
That's where I feel like when I started deconstructing, there was a lot of grieving and a lot of, it was a really hard process to start. But then once I had children and I became a mother, I feel like all of a sudden I started realizing like I am in fact the only one in control of any. Like I am the adult now, like my parents' opinions, I have to question them now before I pass them on. And religion really breeds this because you're not supposed to question things too far. Because it's how God made it. And it's how, like, they use that as, like, out for inquiry.
An out for inquiry. I love that. They use it as an out for inquiry. I also think that religion uses it as a form of control. Whenever I think of social constructs now, I think about how they were kind of brought in to control the masses. And so with religion is also a social construct. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but it is a social construct. And in order for control to be effective, you have to get the people to buy in. And so if you start, you know, telling them the answers rather than them discovering the answers for themselves, you're actually cutting them off from being able to be in tune with what they actually think and feel.
Yeah, I went to a Catholic school from K through eighth grade. Had a graduating class of 20 people in it. And I remember it getting really, really confusing when it came to take sciences that you have to take these sciences to get it, go to high school to have the right like requirements. And I'm just like, so we go to church on Thursdays and then we learn about evolution.
Yeah, the dichotomy.
And like they tried to cut certain things out of it, but like my brain was asking too many questions to begin with for this environment. And then when they did that, I was like, well, now you guys just canceled yourselves out. Like what are we doing?
Yeah, and realizing how various the schools of thought are and kind of equalizing them and being like, okay, like everybody gets to adopt their own school of thought. Can I assess this without inferring any negative or positive energy? And even with, you know, like the story of creation and holding that in conjunction with the story of evolution and being able to understand how both came to be. And one of the things that I absolutely love about evolution is that it took somebody's curiosity to discover all of the information that validates the story that they have told the rest of the world. And I think that deconstruction often starts with curiosity and having the, I'll say, mental wherewithal to go into a mode of deconstruction is difficult if you do not have a supportive community. I think one of the girls that I talked to recently on a coaching call, she was trying to explain to her parents why she opted into coaching. And she had said to him, what did she say? She was like, Dad, I'm just going through a lot right now. Like, there's a lot of things, the divorce, my new relationship with my partner, my kids. And I just feel like there's nobody that I can like really honestly open up to without them shutting me down. And he looked at her and he was like, I just don't get it, you know? And I think that's infuriating for some people to hear that other people just don't get it. But I don't let it anymore. I think that when we want to go into thoughtful consideration of our beliefs and value system, we kind of do need somebody to link arms with and be like, just the gentle reminder that you're safe to explore, you're safe to consider. Just because you're thinking about it doesn't mean that it's actually going to happen. Like all of that, sometimes there's too much at stake with the relationships that have a lot of history in order to do that effectively. And I think the reason why it is so difficult is because it's like, what will I lose if I do venture down this path? And when, you know, you've had a set of beliefs and values that have taken you all the way throughout your life, to even consider changing it is difficult. It's very scary. But then once I feel like once you do allow yourself to consider a different perspective, you're like, oh, this isn't so bad. Like, I totally can do this thing.
Yep. Yeah, we need connection. So when we have taboo subjects like this and we can't express or connect with anybody on it, it just causes you to hit these freezes, and it's so unproductive when you're not doing anything with your thoughts because you don't feel safe to put them anywhere. So,
yeah. I think also a moment in my life that allowed me to come to a place that it was okay to change my mind about things that I held so tightly to was motherhood. And motherhood really took the blinders off of me as far as being able to decide who was going to chart my course. I remember looking at this Facebook moms group that I belonged to in the beginning of my motherhood experience and asking myself, like, why am I allowing a stranger's opinion to drive the direction that I'm going to take in choosing how to feed my child? And I really deliberated a lot on making sure that I had all of the information necessary to give my child the most legs up in life. And I remember the breast milk versus formula debacle inside of my head was absolutely, I'll say, life-taking away, because I could no longer enjoy the experience of feeding and nourishing my child. I became super obsessed with the nuance of which is best. And until I started to open myself. Oh, yeah. And you better not say which one is best.
You better not say that you didn't do breast milk, because...
Yeah, right. If people find out that I deprived my child of breast milk, oh my God. And
I mean, could we even keep having a relationship, like a working relationship, if you did not breastfeed your child?
Oh, people's opinions when they volunteer them so freely was really difficult for me to manage until I realized that I wasn't asking for them, they were just giving them. They just wanted to express themselves. I did not need to take their opinion into consideration. But it really did start to open my eyes to how I could think differently about the problem that I was trying to solve. And I was like, what am I really looking to achieve here with this human life that I am responsible for in this moment? And ultimately, I wanted my child to get to a place in life where she feels free to not only enjoy her life, but also have a really good understanding of who she is and what she wants to become. And neither of those things required breast milk or formula. Like at that point in time, it was like mom's sanity needs to like be intact. So she doesn't need to get hyper obsessed with the decision of breast milk versus formula. That is not energy well spent. That is just spinning your wheels. And I started to realize that I needed to model what I wanted for her. So if I want her to obsess over decisions, then let me model obsessing over decisions. If I want her to become a self-assured individual, then I need to model what it looks like to be self-assured. And it also comes down to, you know, I want her to have a peaceful existence. And for her to have a peaceful existence, she needs to be around peaceful people, which requires me to become a peaceful person. And that was, you know, I think that was the moment where I was like, oh, wow, I can totally think about this problem differently. I can think about the world differently. I can think about myself differently. And when I change the way that I think, I actually change my entire experience of life. So, yeah.
I think motherhood challenged my intuition to another level. Like, it forces you to you have to decide what temperature you're comfortable with keeping them home. You're the only person there to make the decisions. And you kind of have the understanding that, like, the decisions you're making are important. And so then you have to start letting your intuition take over. For me, that was a very difficult thing. But, like, I remember reaching out and realizing, like, nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody else knows what they're doing. I thought a few people had an idea. And now I'm realizing that everybody's just been.
They're all humans. They are all humans and they're all doing their best. And we're all working off of different, I'll say, bases of information. And information is, you know, knowledge you have acquired by having conversations with other people, being within the education system. And then there's also all of your past experiences that inform the decisions that you make today. And I think if you're not cleaning house as far as processing all of that information and understanding what is true to you and what is not true to you, you end up leading a pretty reckless life. As far as embracing change rather than resisting it, I will never forget the moment that I heard the line, the only thing to be dogmatic about is not being dogmatic, and how true that rang for me. Because in the process of, I'll say, my own deconstruction, I started to see my dogmatic views of the people around me as the thing that was hindering me the most. If one of my greatest superpowers is love, then how do I get myself to a place where I can love everyone and everything about my past experiences with them? Like, I really wanted to enact gratitude for my life in a different way than just being like, oh yeah, I'm really thankful for X, Y, and Z. Like, I didn't want Thanksgiving to be the only time that I practice gratitude. I started to see purpose in every person that I had crossed paths with, and wanting to discern what that purpose was so that I could be grateful for it. What is this person revealing to me about me? Like, if I think about other people as mirrors of myself, then I'm quickly able to figure out what judgments I harbor inside of my own head. And being able to eliminate judgment, I think, is crucial to peace and finding a way for you to peacefully exist inside of the world. But yeah, embracing change, like, I think embracing change, there was this moment after the affair where I had really hated who I had become because she was so different than the person I thought I was supposed to be. And when I was doing that, I was like, wait, so am I really saying that I should have just stayed the same? And then I started to think about how the only constant is change. And that gave me the freedom I think I needed in order to realize that instead of resisting change, I needed to be embracing it and get myself to a place where I could understand why change was so difficult, but also so necessary in order to move through life freely and not feel so trapped inside of it. So I think that embracing the ability to change your mind takes time, it takes effort, and it takes a willingness to acknowledge where you might be wrong in your beliefs and your understanding of your beliefs and values in life.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this podcast episode. We appreciate your support and would love to hear your thoughts on it. If you've made it this far, you're likely someone who is invested in the journey of being the other woman. We understand that this can be a difficult and complex experience, which is why we offer guided coaching to help you heal and move forward. We encourage you to explore the links in the episode description or visit theotherwomaninthewife.com/coaching to learn more about our exclusive coaching program and apply today. Thank you again for your support, and we look forward to seeing you in the next episode.